Hey there, everybody. Phil here. I decided I was going to start taking this space to just say hi and maybe give you guys a quick little message about what's going on these days. I need a big favor. I know not everybody uses iTunes to listen to this podcast, but it is one of the biggest ways people do listen to podcasts, and it is one of the only places where you can actually review podcasts. We are woefully short of reviews there in iTunes. Do me a favor, go subscribe in iTunes, even if that's not how you normally listen. Leave a review telling Apple and the world just how awesome we are, and then go back and use whatever you usually use to listen to the podcast. That's it. We got a really good Google I/O preview coming up, and let's just get to it. Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the Android Central Podcast. It is episode number 287 for Thursday, May 12th, 2016. Welcome to the show. I'm Phil Dickinson. We are Android Central. I have Jerry Hildenbrand with me.
Hello, hello, hello.
We have Alex. No, we don't have Alex. Darn it!
Alex, last minute scratch.
Sorry, Alex. We miss you. We have Andrew Martinick, though.
Yes, a decent American replacement for Alex.
Wow. Russell Hollis here, too.
Not at all a replacement for Alex.
So, this is our official Google I.O. preview podcast. When you all hear from us next time, it will be a whole bunch of us together in Mountain View, California for Google I.O. If you haven't heard about it, it is Google's annual developer conference. This will be my sixth, I think. Jerry's seventh, if I'm doing the math right.
I missed the second year, but I've been to every other one. Yeah. Wow.
So, we're going to talk about that some. I've got a couple voicemails I want to go through. We'll probably do those first here in a second. If it's your first time joining us, thank you for doing that, for taking an hour out of your day or your week, or if you're not
better late than never.
Yeah. Or if you're not listening to it all at once, you know, a couple minutes here and there. I do just want to get straight to it. I got a hard stop in front of me today. I got to go hang out with my kid at some school stuff. Woohoo! So let's get, I tell you what, you want to start with the voicemails?
Yep.
We only have three this week, so let's just get to it. I think one of them is actually not timely, but good for Google I/O stuff too. So hang on. Let us start with, who is this? This is Eric.
Hey guys, this is Eric Peterson from Wiley, Texas. I had a comment/question about Intel's announcement last month that they were pulling out of the smartphone and tablet markets. What I'm wondering is what this will do for the Atoms, the Celerons, and the Pentium processors you see in both low-end PCs as well as lots of Chromebooks, because the cores inside those chips share a whole lot with the chips that Intel just axed. And couple that with Chrome OS's, the rumor that next week Google's going to put the full Play Store onto Chrome OS. Could this be a case of perfect timing where Chrome OS, of course, can shift to ARM processors more if, you know, the Celeron market dries up, whereas Windows can't. So tie that with a whole bunch of new apps, and suddenly Chrome OS could be a Windows replacement. I just wanted to get your take on it, see what you guys are thinking. Have a great show, and have a great week at Google I/O next week. Thanks. Bye.
So, I mean, they're essentially, they canceled chips for future devices that probably not a lot of people were going to buy anyway.
Right.
Reading too much
right.
into that.
They took out the chips that they were putting in phones and tablets.
Mostly. Yeah, basically what this announcement comes down to is, hey, we're no longer going to be trying to build mobile-only stuff. And that's a shame.
Yep.
Now, I don't think that has as big a bearing on the Chromebook market as you would think. It seems to me like the stuff that they were putting in phones and, while at this point mostly tablets, is separate from the completely laptop-focused Celeron processors that they're making now.
I see Eric's point. The architecture and technology inside the cores themselves is very similar and sometimes the same. But I think Intel's issue there was more of an overall design. It's, you can use the same cores, but in a laptop or even, you know, a fanless Chromebook, you have a whole lot better heat transfer than you do in a phone. It's really different.
I think that there were other external factors. I mean, anybody who's used a modern Intel powered tablet knows that the performance was absolutely there and there weren't really any compatibility issues. There were external issues of Samsung and Qualcomm just absolutely, and what are the other ones? MediaTek just like completely own the ARM space for all of these mobile devices, and Intel just couldn't break in. I mean, Intel's a gigantic company. Intel needs a big, big market to justify having this mobile corner of its business running.
And Aisha Evans, the VP who's in charge of all that stuff, told us, I mean, flat out at Mobile World Congress, we screwed up years ago by not taking this stuff seriously then. And I'm looking right now, and it looks like she is no longer at Intel, which we had heard was going to happen. And it's too bad. She's pretty awesome.
They're just super far behind in a business sense.
Yeah.
And they caught up a bit in the technology sense, but you're so far behind, and there's so much momentum in everybody using all of these other players that it just wasn't going to happen for Intel. Now, I don't think that means that they're just going to stop making low power Celerons for low end laptops, though.
And I had reviewed a few of these, and so did Russell. I mean, the products themselves weren't bad, right?
No, I had a lot of fun with them. You know, as they were Wi-Fi only devices, and that was where you know, we started seeing problems was moving to LTE, was where a lot of those problems came in for Intel. And I had a lot of fun with the stuff that Dell made. I thought it was incredible.
And now on the Chromebook side, with bringing the Play Store or Android apps, that has no bearing on needing to have an ARM chip in the Chromebook. So you can have a Celeron powered Chromebook or a Core i3 powered or Core i5 powered, whatever Chromebook, and it can still handle these Android apps, because that's a separate layer. So thankfully that's not tied to having to put ARM processors in all these Chromebooks, because at this point, you know, you're not going to be able to have a Chromebook Pixel, you know, that has that kind of performance with an ARM chip. It's just not going to happen right now.
Yeah, Android does a really good job of being able to run on multiple processor architectures. You've got to try really hard to build an app that won't work with an Intel processor.
Yeah. All right, up next, we got our pal RF Mike is back.
What's up, Phil and the crew of Android Central? This is RF Mike from the forums. Phil, my first question for you is, where's our discussion forum for 360 photos and videos?
We talked about that a little bit internally. Jerry, I think we tried getting the backend set up to handle like sharing those, right?
Yeah.
It's just a little early in vVault, yep. And it's kind of wonky on that. I do want to do something, because, I mean, I've been bugging Russell about this stuff all week. He's probably tired of hearing me talk to him about
it. To be clear, though, the forum does exist.
Yes.
The space is there for 360 photos. We just got to figure out how to make it so that we can embed them and look at them pretty on the website.
That's kind of the big problem with those things in general right now.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true.
Yeah.
It's early.
Yeah.
Nothing is easy to get those to display. When you buy a camera and find somewhere you can upload your photo or your video and it looks good, you got to give credit to the people who designed the upload service, because that's not easy yet.
Yep. All right, Mike's not done. Hang on.
Have not seen one. Next up, have you come across any video editing software that you can use for editing your videos on the LG 360 Cam? And then my second question.
All right, we'll get to the second question in a second. Yeah, actually, so Mark Gwim and I played with that for a minute while I was up in New York last time. And it's really, yeah, the only different thing about these videos is some metadata that gets attached to them later. I took two 360 Cam videos and slapped them into Final Cut Pro. Just, you know, I checked the resolution first, gave it the same resolution, you know, for the project, and then exported the master file. And then there are some Python scripts that'll do it. I just downloaded an app to do it for me real quick that reattached the metadata so that services like Facebook and YouTube know how to handle it. And it worked fine. I had two videos edited together. If you haven't seen it yet, I can't remember if we've mentioned it here in the podcast. I've basically told everybody, but Joanna Stern from the Wall Street Journal did an excellent VR primer that is just this heavily edited 360-degree video, and it's great. Really cool walkthrough of seeing her in the different, you know, places as you keep spinning around. But that's all it is. It's just you're taking this flat, you know, two-dimensional video and imagining it in 3D and putting things in different places. And then, you know, just as long as the resolution's right and the metadata's right, then it'll work.
Now, my second question is, do you think LG can actually push out a hardware software update for the hardware via the Bridge app. And I know they can probably push out a software update through the Manager app as well.
So, yes, I do, because I just did it yesterday. when I first listened to this, I was like, I should check to see if there is one. And in fact, there was. There was like 452 megabytes of update. Does that sound large for that sort of accessory to anyone else?
I wouldn't think that the EEPROM on the camera would even hold that much information, if you want to be honest.
It was big, but it was, and the Bridge app doesn't help any. And I get why Mike's asking, because it looks a little janky. But it updated. It took me longer to download it than it took to update it. And I don't know what's new, because all it said was OS, updating Android OS. Okay, but it worked. So yeah, they can and they have. It's just real clunky. So it worked.
Does the 360 camera actually run Android?
I don't think so. As soon as I say yes, it will.
I'm going to find out.
Yeah. Remind me, I had you help me check. Oh, I think I was checking one of the Echoes.
We checked the Echo. It's not.
The Echo Dot. Yeah. But, you just have to remind me how to check.
If the 360 camera runs Android, we're going to root it.
Show me the commands and I'll take a look while we're podcasting, maybe. All right, I'm cutting Mike short there. One more voicemail. This is from, who is this from? Can't see today. This is from Ron.
Hello, Android Central. This is Ron Nelson from Moores Hill, Indiana. And I just want to thank you guys for your excellent podcast and website. And I just want to thank you for all the help that you've given me. And thank you. Anyway, I am asking a question about my Note 4. And now I've gotten the Marshmallow update, which has transformed this phone into an incredible phone. And it no longer has lag. It just is snappy. It's like a brand new phone. And I don't really see a need to upgrade. I use Nova Launcher, and it's a perfect phone. Anyway, one of the things that is missing now with the Marshmallow update is the ability to not have a default application for certain applications. For instance, I use multiple browsers on my phone. Sometimes I like to use Brave. Sometimes I use Chrome. Sometimes I use a Samsung browser. Is there a way to go back to how it was prior to Marshmallow, where you could choose which browser you wanted to use every time you clicked on the link? Thanks, guys.
I hate that. Why does Samsung do that?
Well, yeah, I hate the way that Samsung does it in Marshmallow, but I understand it's confusing in the long run, but I understand from a simplicity standpoint at the time of launching an app that Samsung just defaults to whatever you just opened. And if you don't want it to be the default, you have to go reverse it later. So there's no only this time option anymore.
You going to say something, Jerry?
I was just going to say that basically what Andrew said, they're doing it because they are designed it to look good and simple for users who don't care about this kind of stuff.
And I mean, let's be clear. The default app UI still sucked.
Yeah.
Even in stock Marshmallow. Really,
it's really pretty bad experience to have this dialogue pop up when you tap an app, when, people want to just tap the app and have it open, not manage, default app schemes at the time of running. So you understand it from that standpoint, but to answer the question straight up, no, there's no way to, bring back that in Marshmallow where it doesn't, or where it would prompt you and give you the option to not set it as default. It just sets it as default.
Sorry.
Yeah.
It's no good. All right, Google I.O. I kept thinking about this, and it's like, we used to do this grand Google I.O. preview. We don't know Jack. And I like that. I like the surprise. I like showing up and being surprised for what they're going to do. I mean, look, we know some of the stuff they're going to do, right? We know they're going to do more in stuff. We're going to see more in the in preview. More features. We've already talked about whether we think they're going to actually like release it already, right?
Yeah, they're not.
I was the only one I think who said, yeah, why not? Maybe. And then you all told me I was wrong. Well, that's it. Good preview, guys. See you.
There's a ton of stuff in the guide for what's going to happen this week about VR.
Yep.
And you know, it's got to be more than cardboard.
So we've got, who was it, Recode, who had the story this week that theirs wasn't VR. Somebody else did VR.
So I'm pretty sure it was just talking about VR.
Yeah, some standalone virtual reality thing. All right, so let's talk about the implications of that, I guess. Right now, Google's lone VR, and I even kind of hesitate to call it VR, right?
360 immersive video.
Yeah, sort of. Is cardboard. Is, you know, these two lenses you strap to your face via some sort of face mount thing. And then your phone is the display. Everything's happening on your phone. And the rumor is they've got some standalone thing, right? So that would immediately...
Which he then later backtracked.
A little bit. I still kind of think what LG is doing makes more sense, where it's connected to the phone somehow. And you get the device off your face. You get your phone off your face. That, you know, loses a whole bunch of weight, whole bunch of material, of mass. But you still have all the power of a mobile processor. I don't know. Do you guys think it's really going to be some Wi-Fi connected thing, or maybe even
no?
That's too much information to move back and forth.
Yep.
Wirelessly.
I mean, you see, Oculus Rift and HTC Vive won't even play around with doing wireless,
right?
And they have way more hardware behind them. I could easily see this being just an evolution of the kind of cardboard standard, in that, you know, hey, we want you guys to step things up to maybe more of like a Gear VR level. Still relies on a phone. We're still going to have open plans for people to do virtual reality headsets. But I mean, I think everybody is pretty much in agreement that Google has to step above the novelty of cardboard has completely worn off at this point for anybody who's used it more than once or twice. And they need to step it up to a higher level of, you know, something more approximating actual virtual reality.
Right about now is the time when Russell's just going to come in and tell us we're all wrong.
I want it to be a HoloLens competitor.
Hmm.
I want it to be, we keep hearing the word standalone. And while my initial gut reaction was we were going to see something LG style where it sticks into the bottom of your phone and that drives everything, I'm less convinced of that now. I think, you know, Google's going to drop something that is a straight up headset that you put on that is a self-contained system.
I finally tried HoloLens. Dan Rubino from Windows Central has one, and he was up there in Winnipeg last time I was there. It's a really interesting idea. My only problem was just the
viewing area.
Yeah, the viewing area. You see that it's almost like if you took the floating Google Glass thing and just stuck it in the middle instead of up there in the corner. And maybe it's a little bit bigger. I mean, it was not, and it's not meant to be immersive. It's more AR than VR.
And so if that was the case, I think that would be awesome, because that would be something that Google would be pushing after Glass completely fell flat. But surely that would be separate from an initiative that's a continuation of what they're doing with cardboard and VR. I mean, this, if it's like a HoloLens competitor, that's a completely different market, and doesn't seem like that would take over all of their VR AR efforts.
Sure.
To just go to this one thing.
I don't mean so much a HoloLens competitor as that style, where it's that kind of self-contained headset that you put on, and not like a transparent thing or augmented reality, like just a standalone virtual reality headset, one that is powered by itself and, you know, just kind of takes the virtual reality experience and contains it.
We've got a post we've all been working on about what we think to see from Google I/O, and that's almost word for word what I put in it. That's where Google has to go. That doesn't mean they will, but that's where they have to go. You need to be able to buy a $300 Vive and the word competitor in air quotes. It doesn't have to do everything the HTC Vive does. It just has to do everything the Gear VR does without requiring you have to have this specific hardware to make it work. Something you just put on your face, tap a button and go.
Yeah. I think it'll definitely be beyond cardboard as we know it.
Yep. Cardboard is it's a cool novelty that you can give away with your auto parts store brand on the side or whatever.
It's a great gateway drug, yeah.
Right. But it's not, I mean, it doesn't even compare favorably to Gear VR. We know that. We've used them all. That's what Google has to use Gear VR as a benchmark. We have to do at least this good, or anything we do is pointless.
I'm just flipping through the schedule right here. So we've got a 2-hour keynote on Wednesday. That seems about normal. We had a 3-hour one.
They've had some longer ones than that. So.
What's new in Android is always a big one for us right after that. And it's generally, I mean, you're not going to get any new stuff in that they didn't just already mention. And it's only an hour long, and they generally have a hard time fitting everything in that hour. So it goes really fast and you see a little bit of code, and it's a lot over my head. But I think a lot of the new stuff we hear in that, we're going to hear in the keynote. We might live blog of that as well. We'll see. Whole bunch of, I mean, again, I can't say this enough. It's a developer conference. It's not so much for people like me. You know, it's more for people like Jerry and to a lesser extent, I think the rest of you guys. But if you're coming into it, you know, hoping to see new stuff to buy, there might be a little bit of that, right? But probably not a whole lot. Now, here's one: image compression for Android developers. Important. Super important. Not for me.
We all benefit when developers have better tools and better ways to make smaller apps that run faster.
That's always one of your favorite sessions, right? Is the Android developer tools one.
Yep.
Because I sat in there with you 1 year and learned a lot from it.
Making the apps, it's, you know, you hear a lot about, oh, it's hard to make apps for Android. No, it's easy to make apps for Android. It's hard to make good apps because of the tools you're given. They've really stepped that up the past couple years.
I learned how to update the SDK without having the GUI yesterday. That was kind of cool.
The command switch?
Yeah.
No UI? Yeah.
I didn't know how to do that. Let's see. Yeah. Launch better and iterate faster on Google Play. That's something I can get behind because that's going to be some of the backend stuff that I have to deal with a little bit. Android battery and memory optimizations. Again, I mean, we can talk about that all we want, but... That's some low-level stuff.
Ongoing fight. Do this and you'll have better battery life. But if you do this, your app won't necessarily do all the things you want it to do.
Android Auto for everyone. I'm hoping for some shifts in Android Auto sometime soon. And there's that good Nat and Lowe video this week of how they test Android Auto and everything that goes into it. And I think that gave a really good example of how slowly they take all this and why we don't have a million Android Auto apps and why the ones we have maybe don't quite work the way we would want them to, just from it's a matter of safety, right? They're going slow with that. And they're tracking where you're looking and how much you want to mess with stuff.
I don't know. I kind of wish Android Auto would turn into the next Google Reader. I'm sorry. I think maybe it's one of those projects that nobody realized just how big of a pain in the butt it was going to be.
It's great until it doesn't work.
Yep.
And we've talked about that before. The phone's got to be able to connect, and that's my big thing. VR at Google, there's one. So what we've built, what we've learned, and where we are headed. Get it? Headed?
I got it.
Get it?
Picking up what you're putting down.
It's not that funny. It's not. What's new in Android development tools? That's a big one there. Project Tango developer panel. There's going to be a lot of Tango stuff, right? We know they've been working on the Tango phone for a while.
Which is great. I mean, I love seeing the continued development of Project Tango. I love knowing that it's not a consumer product. That this is absolutely kind of an industry thing. And I love seeing the stuff that's been done on the International Space Station with it and all of the super nerdy stuff.
For somebody who doesn't live and breathe this, what is Project Tango?
Project Tango is, computer vision, basically. It's the ability to take a mobile device with a whole bunch of special cameras on the back of it and use it to capture the three-dimensional space that is around you. Instead of just looking at a two-dimensional object and trying to see three-dimensional by kind of guessing, which is what we've seen with stuff like Intel's RealSense cameras and stuff like that, This is something that you could hold up a Tango tablet or phone and walk around a room, and the computer vision tech that is inside of it will spatially know how far your desk is from the wall, or how far, you know, the lamp that you have in the corner is from your couch, and stuff like that. It's a way for a computer to perceive the three-dimensional space that you're standing in as an actual three-dimensional space.
I did it in Barcelona with a big clunky tablet in a museum there, where it would show you where to walk to go see a thing, and then it would look at the paintings on the wall and tell you things about the paintings. And it was actually looking at it. It wasn't just guessing and being like, oh, yeah, there's a painting up there. We know that because somebody told us. No, it was looking live and seeing it. Really cool.
I got to play with a demo of it that was an indoor map of an office, and you tap one button and it showed me where the elevators are because my wheelchair won't go up the stairs. You tap another button and it was voice to let people with, you know, vision problems know how close they are to a wall or to a desk or to the water cooler. Those kind of real life, you know, scenarios and possibilities, I think, make this really important to me.
Yeah, it's a very interesting kind of practical tool that is very different from the kind of consumer tech that we see. And there are a couple of demos that are like cheapy kind of video games for Tango, but they're not nearly as impactful as this experience where, you know, it knows how deep the step is when you're going down a flight of steps. You know, and that's an incredible thing to think about from a technical perspective, you know, that the phone or tablet that you're holding is spatially aware fascinating.
Right. The person I talked to was really excited, and what got me excited is, imagine if you can't see and you've got a set of headphones on, and as you're walking, it tells you have one more step down.
Right.
Three feet from now you can turn right to go to the men's room. That's cool.
Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to seeing that continue. And honestly, I'm looking forward to see it continue to not be a consumer product. I love the stuff that is happening with MedTech with it, and the stuff that is happening with NASA and you know, all of these really important kind of niche things that are furthering the greater good and not, you know, a toy that I can play games on.
Right. The Android platform Fireside Chat, that's always an interesting one where some of the, they're not powers to be, they're the people who help make this stuff. Basically, it's a Q&A, right? And really interesting.
If nothing else, it's usually really funny.
Yes.
Some of the people that work on this team, whether you know it or not, have amazing senses of humor.
Yes. I think you have to do that sort of work. Because it's unforgiving, it's thankless. You got to deal with people like us talking about you all the time.
Getting everything wrong.
Google Play Awards are Thursday night at 7. I'm excited about that. That'll be fun to see.
It's about time to recognize, you know, some of the people that work really hard to build the apps. Without the apps, Android wouldn't be much of anything.
It's worth, I'll stick a link in the show notes. Google did a blog post on the awards, and it's worth going through the apps if you haven't already, because there were some I've tried and some I haven't.
And you've always seen like the, you know, editor's choice, you know, picks in the Play Store, and sometimes they come out with those lists of different apps that are using, you know, the Android guidelines to their, you know, potential and all that. But this is going to give a way, way bigger scale the recognition.
Yeah, Alpha Bear I've played. It's great. Alto's Adventure is great. Fast Like a Fox is kind of fun. Prune is really interesting if you haven't seen that yet. Beautiful, beautiful game. What else is on there? I need to play The Very Hungry Caterpillar. I love that book. My kids love that book. What, Jerry?
Nothing. I just...
Are you going to say something?
Thought that was funny. I can see you playing it.
Yeah, I love that book. TuneIn Radio, you know, great app. Always love that app. Super important. Yumly, that's one. I think Dan Rubino was getting me into that. Things to cook.
I feel terrible. There are at least three of these that I'm positive I've never heard of before.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So that's why I've started going through them. And I'll put a link in the show notes so you can go try them before next week. See if you think.
Editor's Choice and all this other stuff they put in Google Play.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of like when we do our weekly roundup of apps we like. That's an app we like for one reason or another, but this is a little more broad, and these are the best of the best.
We've had rumors off and on over the months about Google Play Store coming to China. That's a big deal if and when it happens. Yep. If it happens, do you guys think it's going to happen?
Eventually.
Yeah.
I feel like that would be a Google I.O. kind of thing, but it would be huge if it was.
Yeah. I don't think we appreciate just how many phones, you know, and people that opens things up to.
There's a lot that needs to be worked out on the whole Google China relationship thing, and it's more than just the App Store. So I think we'll hear a lot of news all at one time about it. I don't know if it'll be anytime soon, but
and that's going to take a huge reintegration of all the manufacturers that are right. developing over there that have built their operating systems, you know, their version of Android specifically to not have the Play Store in it and replicate everything that it offers.
Right. And they may not be very enthusiastic about throwing away all their work and switching and not just over the to Play Google Store. Stuff.
But all of other Google's other items. So they have their own mapping app and their own yep. messaging app and social networks and all down the line, all these things that Google would completely duplicate that they have built business models around having their own services.
The Amazon Alexa, the Amazon Echo competitor, which I think Recode reported this week is codenamed Chirp and is absolutely a thing. And I think we've heard on the side as well that they're absolutely yeah. working on something. I mean, how could they not be at this point? Think we're going to see that this week? Think it's just going to be a one-off product or the start of a, you know, another Android at home sort of thing.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if that was just a blog post and a release of something, you know, in a couple months, just no. like the On Hub or something else. I wouldn't be surprised, but if it's a bit part of something bigger, it sure IO.
I think that if this is close enough that we're going to actually be able to buy a piece of hardware in the next 12 months, we'll see a demonstration on stage. And then this is, you know, basically how it works. And we're going to start giving you guys tools so you can better integrate with it starting today and look for a release, blah, 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 sometime in the future. It's a big deal. And it's only a big deal if it's on release day that it works the way you expect it to work.
Russell, you and I have been using Echo for a while. Does Google need to release a thing, or does it need to release something more personable? You know what I mean? Like, Google tends to be more engineering, while as Echo is very much, you're talking to Alexa. You're not just talking to a speaker.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I think that for the sake of getting the most people, they probably need to release an inexpensive thing. You know, not really sure what that thing is, but if it's, you know, I would say probably around the $75 to $100 price range that kind of acts like the Echo Dot, you know, as far as being able to function and hopefully something more advanced for people who are all in with stuff like On Hub or even Android TV, you know, being able to kind of operate there. But yeah, I think they do kind of need some kind of physical something to attract the most amount of people.
I don't know. What I'm going to have the most fun with is picking apart the privacy policy of this microphone that hears everything that goes on inside your home.
Did you guys see that story this week? I think Giz or somebody
yep.
tried to FOIA whether the government was able to or turning on
well,
the Echo without your not, you know, like, can they spy on you through the Echo? And they said, we can neither confirm nor deny. I didn't read anything into that because, of course, they weren't going to say anything.
Right. Well, I mean, I think everybody understands the ability is there. It's just somebody at Gizmodo was trying to find out if they've ever done so, and the government won't, you know.
This is why you always start with technology like this in the bedroom. Because you got to figure, someone like me, they're only going to listen the once, and then I don't have to worry about it anymore.
I decided a long time ago, like, I still have a Nest set up and, you know, a camera set up in my living room, and I just don't care anymore. For like the first couple of months, I was like, all right, I'll put some pants on just to walk out into my own living room. Now I don't care. I do not care. If you're spying on me in that, more power to you.
Between the Nest camera, the Xbox Kinect, the PlayStation camera, the Amazon Echo, which are all in my living room, if somebody's listening, God help them.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't care on a personal level too. I mean, if you want to see me in my boxer shorts, I don't care. I mean, just ask. I'll probably show you. But the bigger implications, I don't know. This is touchy stuff. The way the world is so connected, you don't know everybody who you've ever liked one of their posts on Facebook. You don't know those people. You don't know what other things they might be involved in, what other things they're doing. And just by interacting with those people, you may become a person of interest. And that's something that we can't just forget about.
Way back when Google announced, along with some other companies, that they were working on a new sort of SMS standard. Do you think we're going to hear any more about that? Or is that even, you know, lower level?
Google's messaging platform is just such a cluster.
That kind of got blown up. That's not Google. That's just Google supporting a better standard that almost everybody agrees is better. A lot of people gave Google credit for that, and Google doesn't deserve credit for anything more than saying, yeah, that looks really good, and we're going to work hard to support it fully. I don't think that it's a big consumer announcement. I think that's just something that code will be changed, apps will be updated, and it will just support it, and we won't even know.
The consumer announcement would be, we have a new app or a new version of the app that takes advantage of the new SMS standard because it hasn't been updated in so long. And look at these features that you can now
use. With a link at the bottom for nerds to click and see why it's better.
Fair enough.
I'd love to hear Google try to explain what it's trying to do with its messaging platforms, but I don't think that has much to do with SMS.
I think we've been waiting on that explanation for like 5 years now, and we're obviously not going
to
get it.
So. I mean, what they're trying to do is support as many different devices as possible in as many ways as they can, and that leads to a bit of a mess. The Apple method is the exact opposite. We only support these five devices, and if you don't use one, you don't get to use it. And it's very easy to figure out.
Am I right that I didn't care about that weird iMessage run through a server thing and then you can get it on Android hack thing last week?
You don't want to go near that.
Sounded like bad news. Plus you have to compile it yourself, and
you have to have a static IP address and run some software on a computer, like you run your own server for it.
Sounds like fun.
That's another one of those bubble things. I mean, If you're, you know, a tech enthusiast, you know a lot of people that use iMessage. Mm-hmm. But for the rest of the world, remember, less than 2 people out of 10 even use it. So
everybody else is using WhatsApp. And
yeah, I mean, so getting iMessage integrated into other services isn't that big a deal to the other services when you look at the actual metric of who's using what.
What are we forgetting? Let me look at that doc I made you guys fill out. actually, this will be Andrew's first Google I.O.
Yeah.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Super excited.
You picked a heck of one. It's a shame it's not happening at the Moscone for you.
It's going to be wild.
I've been to Moscone for other things at least, but this one's going to be interesting. I won't have the perspective of knowing how it was at Moscone Center and then at the amphitheater.
I got to know what's going to happen, because like at Moscone, they line everyone up in this just impossibly long line to get into the keynote. And as soon as they open the doors, it's like a giant herd of sweaty nerds, like running, sometimes actually running to the convention center.
Running, not sometimes. They are always running. It's
the ones in front.
Jerry got knocked down one year.
Yeah, the first I.O. I went to for Android Central, I didn't take my wheelchair. I thought, I'll manage. But that was a mistake.
That was the one I made you like walk through the airport too.
Yeah, and
that was not good.
number two, I'm sitting there trying to get to my seat at the keynote and got knocked over, literally knocked to the ground. I was like, wow. So
the nice thing is that an amphitheater made to hold tens of thousands of people has pretty good setup for crowd control, I guess, assuming that they don't, you know, try to relive the system of having everybody go through one set of doors.
So I know Jerry has seen this. Russell might have. I'm willing to bet Andrew hasn't. But you've seen the movie of Woodstock, right?
Yeah.
I was there, man. Jerry. I can't remember it because I was one of those naked, sweaty infants, but I was there, dude.
Were you really there?
Yeah, I was really there.
I don't know how we've never talked about that. But yeah, at some point you see, you know, they basically tore the fences down. That's what I expect to happen. This is going to turn into Woodstock. It's going to be 3 days of peace, love, and Android. And yes, there's your show title.
The interesting thing, sure, the keynote's going to be cool because it's going to be at this big amphitheater and it's going to be out, you know, outdoors. But the big thing is logistically having all of the sessions thereafter just in like big tents in the parking lot. Just doesn't seem like it's going to be something that's easy to manage. And it seems like it's going to be horrible.
Yeah.
Compared to, I mean, convention centers are not very cool looking and they're not very fun and they're all bland and well, you know, it's just room after room after room. But that's exactly almost, what you need to manage tens of thousands of people going around everywhere, you
and
know,
that was a
charging
complaint,
up their devices, all that.
That was a complaint last year. They took a lot of the stuff out of the boring, lots of chairs in the big rooms and moved them into these sort of pod sort of things. And while it was more homey, it, you know, you couldn't fit as many people around it.
Right. If you're just there and you just want to have 2 days of learning about everything that they want to tell you, you don't care that you're sitting in a folding chair in a conference center, you know, room. That's perfect because there's AV equipment where the speakers can talk to everybody in the room. They can have all their demonstrations and they don't have to worry about all these outside factors of being in a tent in a parking lot in the sun.
I saw somebody on Google Plus call it Hempfest 2016. And I'm like, yeah, that probably describes what it's going to be like. I'm just curious what happens if it rains.
Yeah.
Part of me hopes that it does, just so I'll know. But
doesn't happen very often out there.
I know.
But it happens sporadically and it does happen. And the funny thing is it's right in the backyard of the Googleplex too. Yep. So, but it's all just going to be in the parking lot of the amphitheater.
I'm disappointed that none of you brought up the potential for Google having weather control.
I really,
over
you know
a
what
small
I'm hoping
area.
For? I'm hoping to see Project Loon Balloons above us.
That would be incredible to have Loon Balloons there to make sure that everyone's connected to solid Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
That would make me happy.
And it makes total sense.
Yeah, sure,
I completely and entirely doubt that entirely.
They could just tether a couple 200 feet off the ground.
Yeah, they have the Googleplex has a pretty solid internet backbone, and they can trot out some pretty sweet Wi-Fi routers in that area.
I'm looking at the weather right now. Let's see. Sunny all week. Fine.
Phil was surprised that Google was recommending that you have a jacket for the morning and then sunscreen for the afternoon.
High of 78, low of 53.
This is what the Bay Area is like 11 months out of the year.
Like twice a year, usually right around Mardi Gras here and along the Gulf Coast where I am. It's big for Mardi Gras. And we tend to forget that, yes, you can totally get sunburned when it's 60 degrees out because it feels so nice.
And you can feel very cold when it's 45 degrees in the morning because, you know, there's fog.
Android Wear, are we expecting anything, any big changes there? Or is that just kind of cruising?
I would love to see something, but I don't think we're gonna. You know, it would be really nice if they came out and said, so about that watch that was terrible and then came back but was still terrible, we have some other ones that are less terrible now that handle LTE. And that might be nice, but otherwise, I don't think they're ready to go anywhere else.
LTE on Project Fi.
That would be awesome.
That, to me, I think, is the key.
A data Fi watch, that would be very cool.
I still think that the people behind the Android Wear project see it as a second screen experience and not a standalone service. I mean,
you're probably right.
We've seen,
I wish that they would focus on that more and focus down on what Android Wear does well and stop throwing new features at it.
Agreed. Let's find a better way to manage your notifications on your wrist and do that sort of thing before we worry about adding, you know, shape-shifting keyboards and LTE modems and all this other stuff.
Yes, you guys are crazy if you want to be charged per megabyte for the data you use on your watch. Come on, guys.
Chrome and Chromebooks?
That's where I'm excited. They haven't... There's no indication that we're going to see any of this crazy stuff we're expecting. Google has said nothing there. If you look through the sessions, there's nothing that just screams and stands out. But we know they're so close that, well, I mean, they're close enough that if you get on the dev channel, you can monkey around and actually see part of what's in store with Android apps. That's a bigger deal than anything we've discussed so far to me.
This is like keynote level stuff.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I remember 2 years ago, Sundar took a pretty large chunk of the keynote to talk about Chrome OS, just Chrome OS feature enhancements. And that's way smaller than what we're talking about with bringing all Android apps from the Play Store to Chrome OS.
And to be fair, we talk about this every year.
Yep. And I don't know, I don't know where we're at. Some of the people that were excited have actually stepped back a little bit. You know, they're not, you know, the rumors that fly around just aren't as enthusiastic as they were before. I mean, I don't have any solid information about much from Google I/O, and I just, the Chrome / Android / integration / whatever it's going to be is an issue that everybody wants to know more about, and I hope we hear something.
We got a week to go. I kind of hope a lot of stuff stays secret. I like surprises. I know I'm not supposed to.
I don't.
We're supposed to leak all the things, but leaks are boring.
I just want to be prepared.
Well, yeah. That's it more than anything. But I'm excited. This is going to be fun. So we've got, I'll be there. Jerry and I are there on press passes. I think Dan Bader is there on a press pass.
Mm-hmm.
Alex got lucky and got in. Andrew got lucky and got in. And Michael Fisher got lucky and got in.
So you guys can stare at us through the door to the press tent.
We can buy a bag of peanuts and feed you through the bars.
We'll wave to you. It'll be fun. It'll be good.
I'm sure it'll be slightly less miserable in the press tent than the general attendee tent.
And I'm going to sit in my really comfortable chair.
Russell's going to be doing all the work from home, I tell you.
Cry.
Poor guy.
What I'm sure is going to be really cool VR stuff happens without me.
Says the guy who has Vive and Rift.
And a Gear VR. And
yeah.
Probably HoloLens soon.
Come on. HoloLens.
Oh, Russell, I promise if they announce a product with a 90 hertz refresh rate or higher screen, I will get on the phone. You know what? I'll find a way to get you there and take my spot.
Anything else we have forgotten or have not talked about and you would like to guess
just
at?
Get ready for a crazy in-person group podcast next week where we talk about all the awesome stuff.
Somebody's going to ask me, why didn't you talk about Project Aura?
We just did.
Yeah, there you go.
Done.
I got nothing to say on Project Aura.
I ran out of a reason to care about Project Aura when the one complaint I had about their system, which was the magnets seemed like a bad idea, turned out to be a bad idea. So
I'll stick with what I've been saying for 2 years. If you actually think a product that works this way has any chance of passing through the FCC, you're a lunatic. We're never ever going to see that in
it's a concept States. Product and a really cool one, but not something anyone should have ever, and I've said this about Glass, I really mean it about Aura, should never ever have put in the same ballpark as a consumer product at all. No.
Yeah, they just started promising stuff way too early.
Yeah. I'm flipping through the emails real quick. I think that's good. I think I am now prepared to fly west for a week. It's going to be fun. Mike Wolfson's going to be out there. If you remember him, he's been developing our Android apps. And by the way, if you want to follow all the Google IS stuff, we will have in our app, I believe, I hope, knock on wood, because I haven't seen it yet, a little surprise for people at some point early next week.
Free bacon?
No, I think I pretty much explained it there, a special Google I/O section.
Dang. Yeah. Letting the cat out of the bag.
Yes. So I haven't seen it yet. It's supposed to magically
free
appear.
Bacon.
So anyway, if you use our app, look out for an update on that. And then you still won't see it. You still have to wait till next week, but we've got to do an app update first. as I said at the beginning, very beginning of this podcast, these guys didn't even hear me say it, so I'm gonna say it again. If you want to do us a big favor, go to iTunes and leave us a review in iTunes, please. Because iTunes is like the only place you can review podcasts. And so a lot of people still look at that. So that would be awesome if you did that. Even if you don't use iTunes to listen to podcasts, and I don't, but I went and left myself a review. You should too.
You gave yourself like 4 stars.
I did.
Absolutely. I installed iTunes in a virtual machine just so I could rate our podcast.
Oh, bless you, Jerry.
And then you burnt the virtual machine to the ground.
I deleted it.
That's what happened to his old computer. He installed it and then just chucked it into the lake.
If you haven't subscribed on Google Play Music, go do that. I tell you what, I need to write something on this. I've been flipping back and forth between Pocket Casts and Google Play Music for my podcast, and here's why. Sonos.
Mm. Sonos.
If you have Sonos, it's great for that. If you don't have Sonos, you probably have more money left over in your wallet.
Probably most people.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be a huge favor if you can go review us on iTunes. We just passed 100,000 followers on Instagram. How about that? That's very exciting.
That's why they changed the icon to celebrate.
They did. Thank you, Instagram, for doing
that. They changed it to look like it belongs in iOS.
It's so bad. I had to bury it so far down in the folder on my home screen so that I just wouldn't see it peeking out at all.
I like the interface change, though.
The icon's crap. And I normally don't freak out about icons, but this is just not good. Anything else for the good of the cause?
We've going once? All.
Going twice? Andrew, Jerry, Russell, thank you. Everybody listening at home, thank you. Next time you hear from us, we will be not podcasting live, most likely, but we will have 6 of us at least in a room together at Google I.O. It's going to be very exciting. Coverage will start Wednesday morning, 10 a.m., with a keynote. We'll have some stuff leading up to it, obviously. But looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun. Thank you for coming with us. We'll see you later.
Goodbye.
Adios.
Bye.